Bingo! All right, good evening. Welcome to this gathering. Thank you for BBS for having us worldwide live. This is the Monday call, and we have Wynn and Terry still being in Denver. And we still are a few minutes away from the hour, so we have the phone lines still open. This is a simulcast with a conference call. And I welcome you all on BBS. Every time you hear a ding, that's dinging, like just now. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. This is with.
Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Percy, North Carolina.
I heard two people. I do recognize Percy. Hi, Percy. Welcome to the call.
Thank you, Ives.
And another lady. Welcome. Please say your name and location.
Francis calling from Concord, California.
Hi, Francis. Welcome. How are you?
Thank you. Fabulous.
All right. All right. So we wait for Wynn to come in. He will be here shortly. I hope.
So I have a quick joke.
Please do.
Okay.
Bring it on.
So this Buddhist monk is in New York, and he goes up to a hot dog stand, and the man behind the hot dog stand said, what would you like on it? And he said, oh, make me one with everything. Maybe I didn't say it right.
But I get it.
Got it, Heiss.
I got it. That's worth a chuckle.
I had to think of something short.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the monk did read the Law of One, right?
That's right. No. He didn't have to.
Hey.
He was already one with everything.
Great. Welcome to the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
Donna in Great Falls, Montana.
Hello, Donna. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well for a Monday. How are you all?
All right. Doing well.
Good. Good.
Hi, Donna.
All right, sweetie.
How are you?
Doing pretty good. Doing pretty
it's
good.
It's been too long since I heard from you.
Oh, I know.
Maryland, PA.
Hello.
Hello, Wynn.
What's that noise?
That was somebody volunteering playing some background music over here.
I see. That sounds like the conference call background noise. Right? Oh, well. All right, 5:59.
You made it in time. Thank you for being here, Wynn.
I made it. We were at the show today till 6 today. So, actually till 4, but then we had to break everything down. So we just got back.
I will turn these off.
Yeah. Terry, you want to be on the phone?
Hello, Heiss, hello, Wynn, it's Jim from Sedona.
Hello, Jim.
I'm all alone.
Oh, man, I'm so happy for you.
Hello, Shirley from Alaska.
Hello, Shirley. Thank you.
Jim, you're never alone.
And I'm alone, too.
All right. Some more people come in. I want to give them the chance to announce themselves. Please do so. Thank you. Welcome to the call.
Robert from Glendale, California.
Hi, Robert. Thank you for being here.
Don in Northern Ohio. Hi, Heiss, everybody.
Hello, good evening, Don. Thank you for being here.
Thanks.
Who else joined in?
Nancy in Michigan's here.
Hello, Nancy. Welcome to the call.
Thanks so much, Heiss.
Hi,
all
Susan
right.
In Delaware.
Hello, Susan.
Hello.
All right. So, 601 in the meantime. Let us mute the line, Wynn, or do you want to talk to the audience?
Okay, let me start the recording.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
Now you noticed I've got
this conference is being recorded.
Hey everybody, this is June 30th, 2014. Wynn and Terry in, wait a second. Let's see who knows what's it.
All callers are unmuted.
What? Uh-oh.
Hello?
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
Why do we have that noise?
That is somebody playing background music. And I did mute it.
All callers are unmuted.
I got it. Here we go.
Hello.
Did you mute? We got it muted, huh? Okay. June 30th, 2014. Testing. What is all that noise? We haven't muted all the lines yet. I wonder if that's me. We see you all. Thank you for being here. Now, what city are Terry and I in?
Denver.
Forgot already?
That's right.
Long week. It must have been a long
Phoenix.
Week. Not Phoenix, Denver. And for those of you that missed, did you guys enjoy the show yesterday?
Yes.
Those of you that listened?
Highly good.
That was different, wasn't it? It's a good thing I didn't figure out what I was going to do, because I was thinking, for those of you that weren't there, I suggest you listen. It was a lot of fun. And
all callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
We had a booth at the International New Age Trade Show. And not a big show. It's a show where New Age stores, etc., go to look at new products. And so one of the reasons I started selling pendants is because I could go to shows like that and then talk about my books and my other material. So yesterday, the show was Saturday, Sunday, and it finished today at 4 o'clock. And then we had to pack everything up. And doing a show is really, if you've never done it, it's a really interesting phenomena, because you have hundreds of people passing by your table. Many of them are influential. Many of them have done some significant things. And you get a chance to meet and talk with people, introduce your products to them. And, you know, one of the things is that the pendants are selling in a bunch of these stores. This is like the third year we've done it, and it's been fairly successful in the stores that are selling it. And then next to the pendants, we set up a thing for our books. And so we had Terry Friedman's book there. We had the Reincarnation book there. And we had the Creator God book there. And but the books take a second fiddle, because they're not really second fiddle, but they take a second fiddle because we never make enough money on the books to even pay the expenses. Really expensive to do a show like that. And then yesterday, I'm saying this because I want to encourage people to listen in. Yesterday, the show was going on at the same time as the grid healing. And Heise was, normally I would have told Heise, could you handle it? And he would have. And he would have done a great job, and Carla would have helped. But Heise wasn't available. So I started the show. And there I was, sitting at a little table with people coming by, and I said, what am I going to do? So I had the people coming by that had these New Age shops say hello, And then I gave them all a little card about the show. And then there weren't any people coming by. It was early morning Sunday. So I started walking through the crowd. And not much of a crowd, to tell you the truth. At that time of the day, not many people. But there were, of course, all hundreds of people with booths. So I would stop at a booth. I'd have my earphone on. I'd say, how would you like to send a prayer out to our planet? Because we got hundreds of people listening right now all over the world. And I would hand them the headset. And we did that. And it was very spontaneous. And it was like, as I was walking through the show, it was quite an amazing experience because I could feel the energy of all of you. I could feel the energy of our sources. And I was like walking with that energy through the show and walking up to people. And they could feel the energy. They didn't know what it was, but they could feel it. And then finally, I came to a booth called Schiffer Publishing. And Schiffer Publishing is a small publishing company in Pennsylvania. And in the 1980s, Schiffer decided to publish the raw material with Carla Ruckert. And because Carla was on the line with me, and I handed the headset to the guy at the booth who I had spoken to previously, who was a young guy who was in charge of their metaphysical products, and their metaphysical books, which I think Carla's was the first. And so he and Carla talked for the first time, because I was suggesting, they've got to change the cover of that book. They've got to change how it looks, because in those days, they didn't know how to promote a book like that. I'm not sure if they know any better, but the promotion for the original raw material said something like, an ancient astronaut speaks to us. So the book, they called Raw an ancient astronaut, and the publisher. And the cover is called The Raw Material. And they've never modernized the look of the book, in spite of the fact that so many people reading it and being inspired by it. So I then, introduced Carla to, I think his name was Christopher, the young guy who was running their metaphysical department. And something might really come of that. I wouldn't be surprised, because he was really excited to talk to Carla. He knows the book has been selling quite regularly. And then I walked, I'm in the one section where all the booksellers are, and I suddenly walk up to the booth where it's called Rainbow Ridge, which is owned by Bob Friedman. And Bob Friedman, I met him two times at these shows. Every year I'm there. And I've always thought that he would be a really good person to work with, because he's the guy that published Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh, if you're familiar with that book. And we just never put it together. And this particular show, I had spoken to Bob briefly. I actually was avoiding him somewhat because I didn't follow up on something last year. But then I ran into him in the lunchroom line. I ran into him at where the water line was to get water. And I ran into him. I said, I'm going to go to his booth now. And there he was coming out of the bathroom at that very moment. So he noticed that. I noticed that. And that was a sign that we were having some kind of connection on the other side or in other realms. And then I walk away from Schiffer Publishing. Next booth I come up to is Bob Friedman's booth, which is called Rainbow Ridge Publishing. And interestingly enough, I happen to have known this, Bob got his first job, Bob Friedman, at Schiffer Publishing in the 1980s, his first job in publishing. And Bob was the person responsible for signing the raw material to Schiffer Publishing in the 1980s. So, like, I mean, I don't know if you guys who are listening caught this, but here I just left Schiffer Publishing. You know, this is 30 years later, and the guy at Schiffer Publishing never talked to Carla. All he knows is the book keeps selling. And then I go to Bob. Bob is the guy that signed the book for Schiffer Publishing in the 1980s. Then he went on to start his own company, and he went to publish Conversations with God. I don't know if you remember Richard Bach. I don't think he published Jonathan Livingston's Eagle, but he published some of Richard's other books. He's published lots of books. It seems like his most popular book right now is somebody who's channeling George Harrison and writing songs with George from the other side to this side. But in any case, 6:13. It was a very interesting kind of session yesterday morning, and I hope you listen. And what I'm going to do today, hope you don't mind, I'm going to play an archive because we are really tired. We were, you know, at the booth till 4 o'clock, and then we had to break it down. And so I said, I don't think, Jerry, you want to say hello to everybody? Well, you're not on the phone. Oh, she can't find a charger. Can't find a charger, right? Okay. Wow. All right. This is a call we did on, I think it is, just a second. Hang on. I think it's called Unconditional Love and How to Express It. We did this on September 17th, 2012. I hope this works. Let's see.
Winfrey, Jeffrey. Hi, Jeffrey. Can you turn those tones off, Hayes?
I did that.
You did. Thank you. And this is our Monday night conference call, and I welcome all of you who are on the internet, and all of you who are on the conference line.
And the conference has been locked.
For quite some time.
The conference has been unlocked.
It suddenly has a lot more people since I was on George Norrie.
All callers are muted.
Very honored to welcome all our new guests. And some of you don't feel like guests anymore. You've been coming onto all our calls and checking it out. And what we do on these calls is fairly unusual. And if I tell you verbally, you're not going to understand it until you hang in on some calls and you get it on a cellular level. So I can tell you the theory is that starting in the year 2002, while I was in the middle of writing The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, I had this experience of a voice talking to me through two women. And if you haven't checked out the website, intelligent-infinity.com, it has a little intro video which tells the whole story. And it was engaging me to ask them questions. And they said they were the Council of Elohim. And I looked up the word Elohim, and it said it was the name for God in the Old Testament. It was the name for God in the Book of Mormon. And that they were also the creators of the physical universe. And I asked them if they were the same. And they said they were part of the same. But they didn't ask me to defer to them. They didn't ask me to worship them or get on my knees. They said they were wanting me. Well, they didn't actually say they wanted me to do anything. They just said, ask them questions. And I said, why are you talking to me? And they said, you're like a cosmic midwife. You know how to bring these things out into the world, and you don't have ego about it. Well, whatever they said, it took me a few years to finally convince myself that they might be who they said they were. Not that I believed that they were, but they might be. And so I started experimenting with it. And I found out when I gave lectures, and I was giving lectures on the book I had written about David Wilcock, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, when I gave lectures, there was this light in the room that people could feel. Many people had never experienced anything like that before. I had experienced that. Years ago, I would go to different spiritual teachers, and sometimes I would experience this energy in the room. Well, now I was showing up, and the energy was in the room when I was there, and people would leave the room, and they could feel the energy. They walked up, and Terry was selling books, and they say, wow, I saw light. I could see auras. And at the time, I was not even talking about my personal experience. I was just talking about the book, and I was going to a series of talks all over California at something called the Holistic Living Expo. And the fellow that was the producer of that kind of liked me and said, anytime you want to, come give a talk. And I didn't make any money. We sold some books. And if I sold books or we did something, I was lucky if it paid enough for the motel. And sometimes it didn't. Sometimes I slept in my car. But I was learning how to do this. His name is Dean Price, and I give him a lot of credit for giving me that carte blanche to talk at his expos. Well, eventually I started talking about my own experience. It took me a few months, but I said, while I was writing the book, this is what happened to me. And I wasn't sure how people would respond. If you can imagine, it was almost like embarrassing, because here I had written a very controversial book to begin with, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And that was really pushing me over the edge to even go out publicly and talk about that. And suddenly the guy who wrote the book is having his friend, his personal relationship, say, excuse me, they want to talk to you again. And this voice starts talking to me that says they created the physical universe. And I was not anxious to say that. I was like, no one is going to believe this, and I'm going to sound like I'm a wannabe. But I did talk about it, and people did listen to it. In fact, some people from those original calls, which were in 2002, are still on this conference line. So I asked them at one point, if I do a conference call, could people sense that energy on a conference call? And they said that was possible. So I started doing some conference calls, and mostly it was me talking. We weren't channeling. Sometimes I would play an audio of a channeling. Sometimes I would read a channeling. But there was never any live channeling until one day in, I believe, 2006, when Daphne, who was living in Cape Cod at the time, who was very skeptical of all of this, when I invited her, you should hear these conference calls. And we had maybe 10 people coming on the call, and all of them had their lives changed in a certain way. So I said, you know, the work we started was really important. And so she came on one of the calls, and in the middle of the call, she said, they want to say something. And so at that time, it was a little nervous having a live discussion with them on a call. And the reason it was nervous, from my point of view, is I had already come to the understanding that with channeling, it was possible for a channel source to be negative. And in fact, at any time, a negative source had the potential to take over the line. So when you do something publicly, you can never take it back. You put it out, and if a negative source comes in, it's a done deal. They're there. Now, I can say something afterwards and said, pay attention to that, and I would, and I have. But in general, I don't believe we've had negative sources on this line. And it's interesting. Sometimes I get emails from people that say, listen, I am talking to Source, and they say what you're doing is not right. Or, I am talking to Divine Source, or I am talking to the Elohim, and they say this. And it's like, when I read those emails, I realize that those people who write those emails, and maybe you're listening tonight, you might think about this if you're listening, those people who write those emails are giving up their power of discernment and believing everything that the voice tells them, which automatically flags them as having the potential for having negative sources. And that's something that you guys should pay very close attention to as you're out in the world trying to scrutinize things, because anyone that says, believe what I say blindly, I am talking to God, I am talking to Jesus, I wouldn't discount the possibility that they are. I wouldn't discount it. But go on and review it based on the information and how you use that information to change your life. The bottom line is, it doesn't matter who's talking, if you can't use it, if you can't get some kind of experience, if you can't get a direct upliftment of energy, it's not worth paying attention to. And I tell that to people, to use that criteria just on the stuff that we bring forth on this call. And Terry, are you sitting still?
Yes, I am.
Do you hear that background noise coming in? Is that not you?
That might be Jim in the kitchen.
Could you ask him to sit still, okay?
Okay. I'm going to mute myself.
Okay. Well, don't forget to unmute yourself, all right?
Okay. All right.
All right. At the proper time. So in any case, that's a very important criteria. And as soon as somebody sends me an email and says, you can't be doing this because my source says this, that's automatically suspect to me. Now, that doesn't, maybe they're right. Maybe I've got it all wrong, but nonetheless, I like the idea of a source that says, let us prove ourselves to you by the way we make you feel, by the wisdom we bring, and not one that says, I am this exalted being and follow what I say, because there's almost a predisposition to give up your power when you hear certain names, and it's like, I don't believe those sources, even those names, want you to give up your power. Now, I know that some of the stuff we bring through is very awesome. It's even awesome for me. It is awesome for me. Not even awesome. It is awesome. And I am just like you. I'm an observer as well as a facilitator here. And I say, wow, did that just happen? Look at that. And I feel the energies, and I'm amazed. If you have not come into one of our Sunday gradioings, I really suggest you do. If you resonate with our other calls, because the Sunday gradioings are dedicated to bringing the energy in. They're dedicated to help people on the line feel the energies, to create a group energy. Now, why do you want to feel the energies? What's the advantage of feeling the energies? Well, basically, there's two main advantages, at least two. One of them is, when you start feeling the energies of the higher dimensions, since all is one, you're only feeling an expanded part of yourself, and you start to get used to living in an expanded energy field. That's the potential. And that means that you bring more synchronicities into your life. You help lift the people around you. Another advantage of feeling the energies is that we can create group intentions. We can create a combining of all the energies of everyone on the phone. Now, we don't just say it. Sometimes we'll have some of the people that are on the call say what they feel because people experience it. And people that are more psychically sensitive really experience it. Some people experience it as a slight upliftment. Some people experience it as a tingling. And some people, like, are on the ceiling. They're flying, and they say, wow. And everyone experiences it differently, including me and including Terry, because we're not creating this experience. We're part of the experience. The experience is being created by everybody on the line and the sources we're talking to. They're not creating the experience. They're combining with our experience. And when that happens, there's a magic that's incredible. And all of you have experienced that magic in the physical 3D realm, or I say most of you. For example, if you go to a really inspiring music concert or a inspiring movie, there's an energy that comes into the theater and that everyone feels that energy. And when the concert or the movie is over, you walk out, when people are looking at each other, they had an experience of oneness because they sat through the energy of that movie. Well, they may not have experienced the energy of the Elohim, but they certainly experienced the energy of oneness. And it's only a slight bit of adjustment to turn that human experience of oneness into a celestial experience of oneness. And then you have something new to identify because it's not a normal experience. And so you have to have the experience. And it's because of this experience, I would guess, that in other times, these guys were thought of as God, because they could have that experience and they could participate in group intentions, and that because they were participating, something could shift in the physical. Now, everyone on this line is in a body, and there is no way you have to integrate this. You're not leaving your body. You're not going to walk around floating around. I don't. Terry comes close to it sometimes, but even she doesn't. And we all have our human, what's called human distortions. And last week, we had the topic of worthiness. And if you didn't listen to that call, I'd go back in our archives and listen to it or read the transcript, because it is an issue that everyone grapples with. Why is it that we don't feel worthy? Why is it that we don't have self-love? Now, of course, we've all gone to the New Age talks that say you've got to love yourself. Well, why is that so hard to do? Why is self-love such a challenge? And one of the reasons that came up, and this is important, is that there are negative forces in this realm on our planet that have been involved with it for millenniums that would like us to be slaves. And some of you who are studying alternative stuff, who are listening to George Norrie, are very aware of all of that stuff. And I've come to realize that a large part of it is true, is accurate. But even that, it's hard to figure out exactly what's so, and I've done a lot of research to try to understand it, but nonetheless, I do believe that there are negative forces that want to control this planet, and by creating kind of a hypnosis that makes you feel unworthy, you're easier to control. So if you start to look at that, you realize your unworthiness is not you. It's been programmed. How do they program unworthiness? Well, I'll give you a simple, everyone knows this example, on the media, on advertising. When they show a very sexy person, very handsome person being very desirable, and if you don't happen to match up to those standards, you think you're undesirable. So if you're undesirable, you're not worthy. Of course, if you buy a certain brand name clothes and you wear that brand, you're suddenly more desirable. If you have the right car, then everyone stares at you and say, wow, I wish I was him. Now you're more desirable. Well, has this fixed your unworthiness? No. And most people never even get to have those things. And if they do get them, they just go on another trip being egotistical, condescending, and they're not very attractive people if that's all they're going for. Well, tonight I brought up the topic of unconditional love. And I don't know if all of you have heard that term, unconditional love. And I think when you hear terms like this, your mind interprets it that in such a way as to think, I have to be nice, or I have to love everybody, or I have to wear my heart on my sleeve. Now, I don't believe that is what unconditional love is, not even close. Unconditional love is where there's something called chakras in your body. Chakras, C-H-A-K-R-A-S. And that is an Indian word, Hindu word, where it talks about energy centers. And there's seven energy centers, and each one is a potential connection to the universe, light energy running through your body. And it goes from what's called your root chakra to your crown chakra. Your crown chakra is at the top of your head, and your root chakra is at the base of your spine. And if we went through all seven, we have the root chakra, we have the sexual chakra, the second chakra, the power chakra, the solar plexus, the heart chakra, which is the chest, the heart, that's the fourth chakra, the fifth chakra, sometimes it's called the wisdom chakra in your throat, the sixth chakra is your third eye, you know, right in between, above your nose, in between your eyes and your forehead, which relates to psychic awareness, remote viewing, visions. And the seventh chakra is at the top of your head. It's called the crown chakra. And if you look that up and look up crown chakra, you'll find sometimes it is the gateway to intelligent infinity. And as each of those chakras opens up in a person, and each of those chakras opens up, you start radiating an energy into the world that starts from that chakra. So people can feel it. Most people can feel it. So, for example, if all you have is your second chakra, people are going to feel that energy. If all you have is your third chakra, you're going to look bossy and unapproachable, like you're going to boss everyone around. If you have your fourth chakra open, you're generating a space that when people around you that are open to it, this doesn't inflict on other people. Somebody has to be open to the receiving of those energies. And they don't even have to agree to it consciously. They just are. The fourth chakra is the heart chakra, which is what generates loving energy into a space. So when you look at people that are generating loving energy, then they are generating unconditional love. Why is it called unconditional love? It's because it radiates to a space, and you don't have to try to aim it, to point it, to be nice. It's just there. I remember one yoga teacher, Swami Satchidananda, who I used to go to his talks years and years ago, used to say, love is like the sun. It doesn't decide who it's going to shine on. It radiates into the space, and everyone who's in the space can feel it that wants to. And, of course, even if you're in the sun, you have the option of pulling covers over you, and that's your free choice, and you won't feel the sun. So unconditional love is radiating into a space. Now, when you do that, suddenly people will be attracted to you that used to reject you. How you people will respond to you is different. Now, you have to learn how to work with that. If you try to be nice to everyone who responds to that unconditional love, very quickly you will get burnt because people will take advantage of you. So we often talk on Sunday. On Sunday we work on opening these energies. I've had amazing emails from people who have been on our Sunday calls who have had huge breakthroughs in releasing energies in their body on the call. And again, if you don't experience it yourself, you won't believe it. And since it's a free call, this is your chance to tune into it, 10 a.m. Sunday morning. And so how do you open up your fourth chakra? Well, you can look at yourself and say, oh, my God, my fourth chakra is not open. It's not open. What am I going to do? I'm not going to graduate this row. And you can go into fear, and you can do all kinds of stuff, and you're making it worse at that point. You're not making it better. One of the reasons I decided to do three calls a week is because I felt that if I was going to tell people this whole thing about graduating this realm and then just say, see you later, it's kind of scary. Well, I want to graduate. How do I graduate? How do I get my fourth chakra open? So we started doing these calls. When I learned that people could feel the energy on the call, and we didn't start doing three calls a week. We started doing one call a week. And quite frankly, I didn't know what I was doing. I'm still not sure I know what I'm doing. In fact, I'm working this as I go. I'm trying to figure out, how do you do this? How do you work it? Suddenly I get all these people sending me emails. How do I fix everybody? Well, I can't fix everybody. In fact, I can't fix anybody. That's an illusion. But I can set a reference point on these calls. So the energy on this call is something that if you keep attending, it starts to shift your energy, or you start to shift your energy. Because you can't do this out of willpower. It just starts to shift. So the first thing is to be curious. Think if there's something there. And the second thing is to pay attention and see if anything happens. And see if Wynn is correct in what he says. But one thing I do notice is that some people make up their minds too quickly. And they miss the opportunity. Because we all come into this realm, almost all of us, with many, 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 many lifetimes of being contracted. And then you come on a phone call and people make all these promises. I don't make promises. I'm just telling my story. But even hearing the story, here, the Elohim is on this call. Heis, you're making a lot of background noise. I'm muting you. Okay. The Elohim is on this call, and they're big guys. They created the universe. And the Ra group is on this call, and they're big guys. So let me go and have an epiphany experience. And you go with that expectation. And occasionally somebody has it. Occasionally they do. But you have to realize that you have spent huge amounts of lifetimes contracted, and that this uncontraction process takes time, and you have to do it. We give you energetic support. We give you a point of view of how things work for you to consider. We give you opportunity to ask questions to these sources about your issues. But ultimately, you are the one that's going to make the change. And how do you make the change? This, one of the things is that I've learned is that because of what we're providing on these calls, the easiest way to make the change is to show up. To show up and listen and keep showing up. And we're like a new network. You're not watching TV. You're not watching the news. You're not being programmed by all those things. We're setting another standard of energy. And I point this out many times. You know, I've been talking since the beginning of the call, and there hasn't been a moment we haven't heard my voice. But the interesting thing is, as soon as I stop talking, there's energy. I'm talking on top of that energy. And that energy, in the space of that energy, is where the other dimensions lie. It's where these sources exist. Now, another way of looking at it, looking at that energy, and I point this out, is that time moves at a different speed. Like, you know how when you're listening to something and you get restless, you say, when is this going to end? Maybe some of you are feeling like that when you're listening to me, and that's okay. But I would bet most of you are not. Now, it's not because of what I'm saying. It's because that on these calls, I believe we're sitting down an example of time moving at a different speed. And when we look at other dimensions, it's hard to exactly visualize what another dimension is. You know, you can think of science fiction and time warps and people walking through machines where they go into the future or they get teleported to somewhere else. What I have come to understand, and I've asked this question, one way of looking at other dimensions is to zone where time moves at a different speed than this zone. This is called 3D. And if you have a clock here, it moves at a certain speed. And yet, even in 3D, everyone is experiencing time differently. Some experience it faster, some experience it slower. What makes time move faster? Having a good time. Having great time with someone you're with. Having beautiful intimacy. And I'm going to suggest that being on this call starts the process of making time move faster. Now, on the illusion of this call, it looks like I'm doing it, but I'm not doing it. I'm just showing up. You're not doing it. It's just happening. There's an alchemy of connection that moves through this call that changes how time feels. And when I stop talking, you can feel the space. If we were wanting to do it, I could stop talking for 5 minutes. Many of you could hold that silent space for quite some time without getting restless, without thinking, when is he going to start again? And as time stops, we start getting access to other realms. You know, if you live with someone, try that. Try it with them. Say, let's just, we use that calling in of the light as a physical way to just say, let's gather in the space of higher energies. And try calling in the light with someone. Or if that feels uncomfortable, say, let's be silent together and feel the energy. Shut your eyes and send unconscious love to that person. And when you start doing that, you start tuning in to unconditional love. It starts to radiate. I would guess that many of you listening right now are feeling unconditional love. And, you know, this is my learning. It blows my mind that we can be on the internet, we can be reaching people all over the world, and I'm sitting here, and I don't feel special. I really don't. I mean, I acknowledge what I'm doing, and I see this is a rare thing to do, and yet I'm sitting here, and we're connecting our loving energies with each other. And as you learn to do that here, you'll learn to do it elsewhere. You'll learn to do it when you go out, when you sit in a restaurant. You'll learn that there's the silence everywhere. And you can walk in the silence and radiate out from the silence. And you are now in the experience of unconditional love. No conditions. No conditions. Just present. You don't have to wear your heart on your sleeve. You don't have to be nice. It doesn't mean you shouldn't be nice. You should be nice when it's appropriate. It's not always appropriate to be nice because people take advantage of you. But you don't have to be nice to radiate unconditional love. You can go and experiment and sit down on a park bench and say, okay, I want to bless this spot. I would like to radiate unconditional love here. I ask the higher sources to work through me and help me, and I'm going to rebroadcast that energy into the space. Now, try saying that and seeing if something shifts inside of you. See if it shifts. You know, we recently tried something new, and whenever I try something new, I say it's an experiment. And believe me, I resist these experiments. I say, what if this doesn't work? Everyone's going to say it doesn't work. But so many people that are coming into our calls are having issues. They're sick. They're going broke. Their mortgages are up. And they email me, and they think I can fix it for them. And I can't. I'm just human like you. But what fixes this is the group energy of support. So I started a healing list, and I figured out how to do this so it's automated. So that's one of the things that is a problem, is we're doing so much stuff for free, and every time I do something, it takes a certain amount of maintenance. And I've run out of my maintenance time, and thank God I would have run out of it a long time ago if I didn't have probably 10 people who are volunteering right now, who are doing some of the maintenance aspects of things, everything from transcribing to helping to send the emails out to answering people who didn't get the book, the Creator God book, when they somehow they didn't download it properly, they lost the link. And, I mean, all these people are working for free. And this has to, if this is going to reach a lot of people, it has to create enough foundation so that it can support itself. And that I'm not, you know, people people are working in the evenings. They have jobs. A couple of people are lucky enough to have independent incomes. And somehow we have brought it by the seat of our pants to the point we're at now. And quite frankly, when I was when I had that moment to be on George Norrie, when they asked me, you know, exactly what happened was, I have been calling them for 10 years, ever since my book came out. And I was on one time when the book came out, one time to talk about the book. And I never talked about my own experience, and David Wilcock was on with me. It's probably somewhere on some archive on Coast to Coast. And then I happened to call the producer about 2.5 months ago, because I had just put up my website, and I had sent it to her, and I wanted to see if she had looked at the website, and she hadn't. But I said, please look at it. I think she looked at it while she was talking to me. And, you know, it was not easy to put up that website. It was like, I like being anonymous. And suddenly, I'm telling this story, and what are people going to think? Am I going to have a lot of religious people slamming me? And, you know, am I going to be broadcast on blogs everywhere? But I put it up anyway. I said, I got to do something and put this out. My daughter, she looked at it. She talked to me for 2 hours. And she said, I think I'll put you on. I'll call you back. And then she said, okay, there's an hour tonight. Do you want to be on? And I almost said, no, I'm not ready. It was scary. But luckily, I didn't say no, and I did it. And, of course, a month later, I was on again for 3 hours. And all of you people who are on this, many of you people who are on this call, are here because she said yes. And you're here because I called her on that day and that I talked to her. And I was strong when I talked to her, and that I had all this practice. I had practice sleeping in my car, going to expos, learning how to talk about this, because I didn't know how to do it. And I had to train myself. I had to see how people would respond, and here we are. So I've been talking about unconditional love, and I hope you guys understand the difference. You know, there's something called tribal love. And tribal love is loving your family, loving your children, loving your religious group, loving a limited group, going into that group and you feel a certain comfort in that group, and you feel a sense of love in that group. And that is love, and that is an open heart, but it is not unconditional love. Unconditional love is when you can walk into the world, no matter where you are, keep your heart open, and everyone can feel it, or those that are meant to will feel it. I'll tell you a story. Last night, I went into the local Walgreens, and this beautiful blonde woman, older lady, very radiant, looked at me and said, I have to thank you. And I said, now, what is she going to thank me for? I didn't remember. And she said, I said, what is it? Well, she said, when you come check out, I'll tell you later. And she said that I had, hang on a second.
When I
came in there a month ago, and I looked at her, and I said, I didn't even know who she was. She didn't know who I was. And she was like, she had the qualities of being an Elohim soul in this realm. I've learned to recognize those qualities. And I looked at her and I said, you know, I think you're from another dimension. Did you ever think of that? And she looked at me and beautiful love was pouring out of her. And she said, you know what, I did think of that. And I don't think she ever shared it with anyone. You know, people feel that way and they don't talk about it. Sounds too crazy. So I told her, you should go to my website and look at my video and then read my book if it resonates. And so now I said, So what did I do? I had no memory of that.